Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 109. I'm recording it on Friday, March 13th, 2009. It's my younger boy's birthday today, Robert Augustine. He's turning 7. And he has lots of Legos today. The P10 level today is 12. That's a little below fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at the Incompetech.com website. And the name of the musical selection for this particular podcast is Happy Alley. Again, a fitting title given the theme of the podcast, which is entitled Beyond Doom and Gloom. There's gold on the other side of this black mountain. We are up against a black mountain. I'm a hobbit. You're probably hobbits, the type of people that come to PassionSaving.com or of the hobbit variety. Oh boy. And we've been given the task of taking the ring of passive investing and throwing it back into the fiery pit in Mount Doom. And the only trouble is these orcs. These orcs, they're everywhere you turn. It's orcs to the right and ringwraiths to the left. And I'm stuck in the middle with you. And we've got to hang together as hobbits will, and we got to cheer each other up, and we have to resist giving in to our fear. It's my favorite thing to do. When I was back in the days before the passive investing price crash of 2008. I've been posting on investing on a daily basis since May 13th, 2002. And, I felt I was doing the right thing because I knew I was helping my fellow hobbits plan for financial freedom by telling them the realities of stock investing. I was sure of that. I was sure it was the right thing to do. But it was a drag to have to be pulling people down. People be saying, hey, the grainy study tells me I can retire early. I'm already, and I'd say, well, actually not. Actually, you hand in that resignation today and you're gonna go kaboom. You're gonna land on your big fat bottom and you're gonna wish you had never heard about old school safe withdrawal rate studies. So you don't want to do that. If you're going to retire early, you want it to be a retirement that's going to last, a retirement that's going to work out. You want the real thing. You want the real thing. Like Smokey told us, you better shop around. Good-looking girls are a dime a dozen. Good-looking safe withdrawal rate studies are a dime a dozen. You want to find one that's going to give you true loving. That's the new school variety of safe withdrawal rate study. I'm jazzed. I remember being 7. I can't be 7 again, but I can watch my boy. He likes the idea. So I used to have to be this, guy wearing a black cloak telling people, don't think you can retire now, sonny boy. You got another thought coming, sonny. Ain't gonna work. And now those days are over. Now everything flips because now we're not, you know, irrational exuberance. That's gone. There ain't no overvaluation today. It's undervaluation, and it's, you know, looks like it might get worse. And so following the Gene Malk rule, which loyal listeners to my podcast already know about, Gene Malk was manager of the Philadelphia Phillies, and he taught me an important life lesson. He said, whenever the team's on a winning streak and they're starting to strut like peacocks, you gotta take them down a notch because they get a little too proud and they stop doing their, you know, leg lifts and they stop doing the, you know, running in the outfield and they stop tagging up and they just get sloppy all the way around. And you gotta take them down a peg. But when they're in a losing streak and they're striking out, you got to give them a little pep talk. You got to say, look, it's not an accident that you're in the major leagues. You earned it. You got what it takes inside. And this is just a bump in the road. Bump in the road. Worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. Bump in the road, says Farmer Hocus. Not to worry. Well, I like the idea of being able to take the other side of the podium. I like the idea of taking the other side of the story. So, I'm always looking for opportunities to give some upwards. I'm sick of the doom and gloom just ain't my thing. I'm a reality principle guy, and that's why I'm an optimistic guy, because I've read the last page of this book. I keep trying to explain this to people and nobody will listen. Nobody ever pays attention to the good stuff. When I read a book, nonfiction or fiction, doesn't matter. You know, I usually check out first, you know, you check out the about the author, and I check out the dedication, whatever. But then before I start to read the actual text, I always check out the last page because I don't like surprises. I don't mind if they want to put these trick Alfred Hitchcock endings. That's their business. But I don't want to be surprised by them. I want to know they're coming. So I read the last page and then I know how it's going to turn out. And then fine, you know, throw your best at me. And I like, and people say, oh, you ruins the surprise, ruins the suspense. Well, no, it doesn't. Then I can appreciate how the author takes us by the hand and leads us to that point. That's just fine. So, you know, if you write a book and you know I'm going to read it, I'm going to read that last page first and then the first page, and then we work back. We work back to the last page again. Well, before I put that infamous post of May 13th, 2002 down on the table, you know, I said, you know, there's going to be people threatening to kill me. I either have to take out an insurance policy or I need to check the last page. And so I did. I went to the keeper of the post archives of the Retire Early and Indexing Discussion Board communities. And I said, post archive keeper, may I please see the last page? And he said, why? This is extraordinary. And I said, well, take a look at this post I'm going to be putting down on the table today. And he took a look and he said, holy moly, you're going to put this down? And I said, yes, sir. And he said, do you understand that John Graney attends meetings in this board community? And I said, I understand, sir. And he said, he said, young man, because the post archive keeper is an old fellow. He says, young man, I advise you to take a different path. If you ever want to grow to be an old man, but if you're too young and foolish to take my advice, I think we could bend the rules a little bit and let you have a look at the last page. It wouldn't kill anyone. Just keep it under your collar. Don't be telling, So don't you tell. I'm letting you in on a secret, and you know, the guy put his career on the line for me. So let's keep it tight. But I looked at that last page, and the good guys win in the end. You know, I didn't realize. Of course, I only read the last page. I didn't realize how many twists and turns there were going to be. If I'd known that, I would have taken a more practical. I would have taken a more practical approach. I would have went back to that Big Six accounting firm. Said, please take me back. Please, Mr. Postman. Wait a minute. Check your bag and see one more time for me. But we win. The good guys win. So, not to worry. So, you know, doom and gloom means nothing to me and the other hobbits. But whenever I get a chance to dispel doom and gloom, that makes me happy. And I have a friend. His name's Brian. I've spoken about him before. He was my friend back at those Big Six accounting days, and even before that, even in my reporter days. And Brian and me, we worked on Capitol Hill together. He was a lobbyist, and I was a reporter when we got to know each other, and then we were lobbyists together. And we spent a lot of time together, many years, and we'd go to lunch a lot, and we used to get in trouble because he would he used to give me a ride home about 3 days a week, and whenever he'd give me a ride home, we'd start talking about some subject. It could be investing, or it could be work, or it could be politics or taxes, since we were studying taxes, all kinds of things. God knows what we talked about. And we're both the type that like to explore the implications of a subject. So we would do that, and our poor wives would be, expecting us home at 6:30, and he would drive me to my house and park the car, and we'd be talking, it'd be 7:20 before, I came in the door. And then later for him by the time he got home. So I think our wives wanted to put the kibosh on this, but we somehow would always work around. We would work around it. Anyways, Brian and I had many discussions, and, these are the days when I was studying this stuff, the investing stuff. And because I was putting together my plan, my escape plan from corporate America, and I needed to have the investing stuff right to have any hope of that plan surviving. So I was checking things out, and I would tell Brian, and I said, Brian, here's the deal on stocks. And, he'd listen. He was interested. He'd ask lots of questions, and we'd talk things over. But the magnitude of it, a lot of people have a hard time accepting, and he was in that group, and I went to zero stocks, and this was, I don't know exactly the year, but late 90s. And stocks were, there were days they were going up every day, they'd go up 30% in a year. And he'd say, Rob, you're nuts. You understand you're nuts? And I'd say, I understand, I get it. But look at this historical data, Brian. Look at this historical data. Did you ever check it out? He'd say, Rob, historical data, historical schmata, 30% returns, got zero allocation. My friend. So we've stayed in touch. We don't have that much contact. I try to get back to Washington every now and then, but it's sort of a pain in the neck, the traffic, to get there. So I don't do it often. So we don't. I'm gonna try to make a day where I go to see Brian this spring, hopefully. But every now and then we exchange emails, and he sent me an email today, And and what happened is, you know, what happens with my writing, this happens in post all the time. These ideas are churning around in your head. You're thinking about things. And then somebody asks the right question. This is why I love discussion boards. Somebody asks the right question and it just pours out of your, you know, it's like blood out of a vein. You don't have to work it. It just comes. And the best stuff comes that way. They call that writing in flow. That's the stuff that really counts. So I wrote a response to Brian that I thought was thrilling. You know, if I have to say so myself, I do believe. So I'll just read you quick what Brian said, and then I'll read you what I said, and then I'll maybe talk a little bit about it. So Brian, Rob's friend Brian, says, Rob, the Wall Street Journal ran a thread today with the following question. Topic, how has the recession affected your net worth? And then he says, I'm going to skip some, but he says a couple of philosophical comments. If everyone has lost money, or the vast majority, when are we really any poorer? I think the point he's making there is that, you know, people will say this with housing. I've heard people make this argument that if the value of your house goes down dramatically, but all the other houses go down dramatically too, maybe you're not really any worse off. It's just sort of like, it's almost like reverse inflation. You know, you still have as much of a share of the world's goods as you ever had. So is it really such a bad thing? So that's a good question. I answered, and as I say, the answer made me happy. So here's my answer. Brian, you're asking a penetrating question. I wish that everyone would take some time and think this one through. If they did, that would help a lot. The full reality is that there has been no loss. The money that was, quote, lost was pretend money. It was cotton candy that has now been blown away in the wind. It never existed in the first place. So, of course, it was not possible to, quote, lose it. One cannot lose something that does not exist in the first place. However, we are poorer as a result of our decision to entertain the illusion of being richer for a time. One, people who believed that the illusory wealth was real started businesses because of that belief, and now have seen those businesses fail when the illusory wealth was taken away. The years of effort devoted to building those businesses is lost. That's a loss for the entire society, because those years could have been put to more constructive use. Two, people who believed that the illusory wealth was real spent far larger sums on houses and cars and vacations than they would have had they known that most of the stock market gains of the 1990s were comprised of funny money. Three, people have failed to properly plan for their retirements because they believe that the numbers they saw on the bottom line of their portfolio statements were reasonably accurate. Four, businesses that would have done better in an environment in which people didn't think they were as rich as we had come for a time to believe we were, failed in earlier years because they were trying to compete with businesses that gained an unfair advantage because of the belief in the funny money. For example, companies selling luxury homes moved ahead of companies selling modest homes because luxury homes seemed to make more sense for a time than they would have had we known the real numbers. Five, lawmakers have directed huge amounts of money to stimulus projects that would not have been devoted to those projects had we been talking straight with each other about the true level of wealth in our society. The money that came from overvaluation of stocks was pretend money. We've lost nothing in returning to fair value prices. But we have caused millions of unfortunate economic choices to take place by telling people for 13 years, 1995 through 2008, that they possessed far more in the way of accumulated wealth than they in fact possessed. It's a tragedy. The good news is that we could turn it around by making a decision as a society to begin talking straight about how stocks work. If we did that, the economic growth that would result in the following years would be huge. All of the negatives would be turned into positives. My hope is that this crisis is going to cause so much pain that it will cause people to ask the fundamental questions that need to be asked to get things on a much better track. It's a gut check for our society. Do we like what comes from telling lies to ourselves about what our stock portfolios are worth? Or can we reach deep down and transform an unfortunate set of circumstances into something that ends up generating lots of wonderful, wonderful advances in years to come? Learning how stock investing works is like learning how to cure cancer, or how to fly, or how to build a computer. There are thousands of implications that affect every aspect of human life that follow from it. Does that make you feel a little better? Should. You know, if you read the book, Passion Saving, it's a book on how to manage your money. But it's not one of these books that has, you know, at the end of the chapter, here's a little checklist of tips for this chapter, you know. And not that there's anything wrong with that. That's fine. That's the way most people do it. But Passion Saving is more like a novel. Now, it's not a novel. You know, it's logic chains. It's arguments. You know, one leading to the other. But the book essentially starts out with a puzzle. That's how it starts. I forget. Boy, I wish I could remember. I should try to remember now the first words. And boy, they're short. Boy, I struggled over those first words. But I haven't looked at that book in a long time. I've been so caught up with the investing stuff. But it starts out with a puzzle. And I think it's, I don't recall exactly what the puzzle is, but the puzzle has something to do with save the way you spend. I don't know, what's the first chapter? How? Oh boy, things that were so important once upon a time. If you knew how many times I wrote that first page, you would put me in an institution. How you can spend more than you earn and not go into debt. I think that's the title of the first chapter. How you can spend more than you earn and not go into debt. And that's a puzzle. How can you do that? That sounds, you spend more than you earn, you don't go into debt. That sounds appealing, but doesn't sound possible. That's a puzzle. And of course, the same thing's true in investing. There's a puzzle that I've worked on in investing. The puzzle in investing is how do you increase your returns while diminishing your risk? And the passive investors say can't be done, but they're wrong. You do it by investing intelligently, investing rationally. And the same thing's true in the saving area. There is a way to spend more than you earn every year of your life and never go into debt. And it's the secret of effective money management. How do you do it? You first save money. That's how you do it. You save money. Once you have money saved, the money earns money. So you can spend every year for the rest of your life. If you save just $100, that $100, if it earns a 5% real return, it earns $5 every year for the rest of your life. So you now, if the year before you had to earn, $50,000 to cover your expenses, this year you only need to earn $49,995. Because you've got $100 put aside, earning $5 every year for the rest of your life. So you can spend more than you earn every year, $5 more than you earn every year for the rest of your life, and never go into debt. When you understand that principle, you understand how to save effectively. I better do some podcast on saving. I'm forgetting the chapter titles of my book. I've got to turn my attentions back there. But I got to solve this economic crisis first. That guy at Treasury, I don't even know his name, but he's getting a lot of heat. And I'm going to, you know, he's probably got some hobbit blood in him. Shouldn't we all step forward and help the poor guy out? For heaven's sake. Have a little, you know. So, that was the secret of saving to me. Once I understood, it's a simple concept, but it's a profound concept. Once I understood that you could, you know, spend more than you earned, I thought it was so cool that I wanted to put more than $100 aside. You know, I decided, well, 100's good. How about 1,000? How about 10,000? How about 100,000? I just kept doing it. Changed a guy who had never saved anything to a guy who saved whole big bunches. Well, the book is written that way. The book is written, the way it's written is, here's a puzzle, and then every chapter, every section of the chapter, you know, solves a little puzzle, and each chapter solves a big puzzle, and by the end of the 12 chapters, it's all been revealed. It's like a mystery novel. And, I have to remember now why. I had better calm down today. I can't remember now why I got off on that riff. But the point, it had something to do with solving puzzles. I'm sure of that. It had something to do with solving puzzles, I guess, in the investing area. But, you know, in the investing area, the puzzle is how do you both save. How do you both get higher returns and with less risk? And the passive people tell you, oh, no, that would be beating the market. That's not possible. But it is possible. That's rational investing. You become aware, just as the person trying to manage his money effectively has to become aware of the true benefit of saving. That's how you fuel a successful money management effort. You have to learn the secret, because when you learn the secret, you're motivated. And the same thing's true in the investing area. You have to learn the secret. If you think that you can't beat the market, if you think that you can't time the market, if you think you can stay at the same stock allocation no matter what prices are, that prices don't matter, if you think that passive investing can work, you're trapped. If you get out of the trap, there's just no end to the good stuff. There's, what's the title of the podcast? There's gold on the other side of this black mountain. And I say, you know, it hurts me, but I say in the email to my friend Brian, I say, there's a sentence in there. I'm not going to go back and look, but there's a sentence in there where I say, my hope is that the pain will grow so great. Oh, yeah, this is what I was thinking of. Now I see. Boy, am I smart. I worked my way back to the part I forgot. I said, if you read that book, if you read Passion Saving, it's clues and puzzles, and the puzzles are being revealed, and as the puzzles are revealed, new clues are sort of, you know, and it all sort of works together in a sort of dramatic tension, I hope, one hopes. But the, you know, one of the turning points is the opening of chapter 5, where I talk about, oh, the what was it called, the day the stock price of Me Incorporated took a tumble, something like that. And, you know, I lost the job, my dream job I had worked for years to get. And I lost it in the recession of the early 1990s. And I was sad, very sad. I'm joking now, but I wasn't joking then. I was very sad. I got another job. I wasn't going to go hungry. Got another job paying more. But I was sad because it's not the job I wanted. It's not the work I wanted to do. And I knew it was going to take me on a path that was going to get me farther and farther away from the work I wanted to do. And I was going to start earning more money, and I was never going to be able to get back to where I once belonged. And I remember, this was, I had just been married. We were married. My wife and I were married about 3 months, just around the time I started the new job. That new job. And we had moved into a house when we got married, townhouse. And we had a hot tub. Pretty jazzy in those days. Those were the days. And I still remember today. You know how these certain, your brain only has room for so many memories. And as you get, I'm not old, but as you get a little bit older, middle-aged, I'm certainly middle-aged, and as you think back on the things you remember, you'll wonder, why did that one stick in my head? And I remember being in that hot tub, and, I was depressed. I was depressed. This was after a few months, and I just felt, there's not a thing I can do. I can't leave this job. I'm married. I mean, we didn't have kids, so the responsibilities weren't that pressing, but I sort of suspected they'd be coming. And, we had a certain lifestyle we were used to, and we had a mortgage, of course. And I felt, my job skills were such that if I were to leave the job I was at, I was not going to get anything close to that income. I sort of had skills that, made me right for that job, but were not easily transferable without a big drop in income. And I felt stuck. And I remember I wasn't at all religious in those days. I'm a little more religious today, but I've got a long ways to go, it would be fair to say. But I don't know if I'd say I was praying, but I was having a conversation with God, or whatever God was to me in those days. And I said, if I ever am able to look back on this and say that it was a good thing, boy, would that be something. That was the thought in my head, was that as bad as it was, as wretched as it was, that, it was going to, you hear these stories, people say it turns into something good. I said, could it turn into something good? Well, I'm here to tell you, fellow hobbits of the world, and any orcs or ringwraiths listening in as well. Hi, John. Hi, Mel. I'm here to tell you that every podcast at this website is the product of that suffering. Every article at the site, every calculator, every post put to a discussion board, they're all the product of that. Because it was losing that job that caused me to break down and write a budget, and then writing a budget, got me looking into the subject of saving, and I became a madman for years. And then learning about saving took me to the Retire Early Board at Motley Fool, and being at the Retire Early Board made me want to defend my fellow community members when they were being attacked for talking in realistic ways about stock investing, and having to come up with the information to defend them led me to the research project that led to the development of valuation-informed indexing and the rational investing model and the stock return predictor and all the rest. So, from bad things, Mama, good things one day come. That's the way it works. It's the way it works. It's God's plan. God is a hard guy to figure sometimes. He doesn't do it the way I think he should do it. And it... Boy. But... They say he's smarter than me. You know? That's what they say. I checked it out. They say that. And they say, maybe, Rob, you don't get it, and God gets it. And maybe you should just let it go. Just let him do his thing. So sometimes you got to do that. So the passive investing stock crash of 2008 was part of God's plan, friends and neighbors. It was part of God's plan. And God loves us. He's not doing this. He's not doing this to hurt us. He's not mad at us. I mean, maybe he's a little mad, you know. There were one or two little indiscretions on our part. I might be a little bit mad. But he loves his children. And he's trying to steer us in the right direction. And so the story is, yes, you lost your job. Yes, your retirement's gone bust, or your hopes for retirement have gone bust if you haven't handed in the resignation yet. And yes, the economy's headed over a cliff, and you know, we've suffered. But we can turn it into something good. It's not a joke. And I went, you know, the last podcast, was it number 108? Podcast number 108 was on the five stages of investing grief. I believe that we're all at different stages, but most of us are at the third stage today. We're not quite in denial anymore. We're acknowledging maybe this passive investing stuff wasn't so hot after all. And we're not in the angry stage anymore. There's still goons, but the goonish spirit is not what it once was. We're in the negotiation stage where we're saying, yeah, you know, maybe mistakes were made. Maybe some mistakes were made. But do we have to really acknowledge getting anything wrong? That would be sort of extreme. Let's not do that. Let's just pretend. Let's pretend. Maybe we'll be a little less dogmatic. Maybe we were a little too dogmatic. Maybe we could open up a little bit. But maybe we could allow new school and old school the same time. You know, we don't have to choose. Used to be new school was banned, old school was allowed. Now we'll open up, we'll negotiate. We'll say, hey, old school, new school, what's the difference? It's all just numbers. Could do that. And after we get tired of that, who knows how long it will take, we will enter the depression stage. That's the stage I was in the hot tub. And that's the stage, that's true capitulation. But then comes that wonderful stage 5, acceptance. That's what we should be looking forward to. And so what I want to do is give people visions of acceptance and what it means. And I don't hear many people talking about this. I don't hear many people saying that this economic crisis is a good thing. And if they're not saying that, that means they're not really being serious about it yet. Because if you get serious about it, that means being serious about how much destruction we've caused. But once you're serious about how much destruction, it means you're actually looking at the reality. And once you're looking at the reality, you don't see just destruction. You see all the wonderful stuff. Because it's not all destruction. That's not what this is about. Humans, the hard thing, you know, May 13th, 2002, I put up a post. The old school safe withdrawal rate studies that we use to plan our retirements are analytically invalid. They don't count valuations. All the numbers are wrong. Why don't we tell people the real numbers? Can I get a witness? And I get witnesses, hundreds. Amen, brother. But then there's these orcs cause problems. But the big, you know, the test was always, it was always the middle people. You know, the orcs, I don't know, 10%, 20% of the community. And you had 10% that were rational investors. And so we had all the rules on our side. The rules at all the boards were on the side of the hobbits. They were anti-orc. But the problem with those people in the middle, the people in the middle said, yeah, we'd like to hear the realities. Rob, that's great. We'd love to hear it. But wait a minute. The orcs don't like it. And we don't want to hurt the feelings of the orcs, nice orcs. They like to eat hobbit stew for breakfast, but they're nice orcs. We can't make them sad. Rob, you're a meanie, Rob. You're so mean. So they said, we can't be telling people the accurate numbers for safe withdrawal rates. It'll make the orcs feel bad. The orc studies. Who's going to want an orc study if you put out a hobbit study? Can't do that. No. Be too mean. So, they'd say, Rob, could you please just drop it, Rob? We love you, man. Can you talk about saving? We like that saving stuff. That was good. If you could go back and be like that again, puppy dog poster, we like that. And I'd say, you know, I'm not going to push it. I'm not going to put up threads, shoving it down people's throat. If people want to follow the old school studies, it's their business. But if the subject comes up in a room and I'm present, I am obligated to report the numbers accurately. That's part of the job. That's what I'll do. And people didn't understand it. They said, why can't you just forget about it? And I'd say, look, learning is a building block process. You learn the first thing, the fundamental, and then you build, and then you build, and then you build. And the problem with this passive investing model is the fundamentals are wrong. Valuations do affect long-term returns. Long-term timing does work and is required for long-term success. So the fundamentals are wrong, and they've built a mansion on top of it, and the whole mansion's going to collapse to the ground because it's all built on gibberish. We've got to get down there and fix it. We can't talk intelligently about investing unless we do that. And I personally prefer to talk about saving, but at some point, if you don't talk about investing, you can't really have a retire early board. As important as saving is, investing is important too at some point. You've got to invest or you can't retire early. So we have to talk about it at some point. And if my community is going to get destroyed if I don't try, I've got to give it a try. But of course, so I just kept going down that path, you know, and people helped out. Lots of people helped out. And I, you know, took whatever they gave out of their hearts and built what I could build. And I've now got a website for, you know, after the Depression. We've already built the website, the post-Depression website. So it's there. So I've now got X-ray vision because I've studied all these things that few other people have studied, and I see things other people don't see. Through no intelligence of my own, just sheer stubbornness, nothing else. And, you know, I'm here to tell you this is the worst. You know, they're saying it's the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression, but of course they're saying it might get worse than that. And if you go by the P10 levels, it will. I don't personally think it will get worse, but I just refuse to consider the possibility. I don't have a rational argument for why it won't get worse. I just refuse to entertain the thought. But it's probably, you know, it's already bad, so saying it's bad would be saying nothing. So at the very minimum, it's bad, and it might be worse than the Depression, or maybe it'll just be equal to the Depression, or maybe not quite as bad. We'll see. But what you have to understand is the passive investing model is a boom and bust model. It's all fantasy. There's never been a stock market in which valuations didn't affect long-term returns. Never. It never will be one. It's a logical impossibility. Thinking that there could be a stock market somewhere where passive investing would work for the long term is like thinking there could be a perpetual motion machine. It cannot be. It's not only that it has never been. It cannot be. If timing really were impossible, that would mean that valuations didn't affect long-term returns. That can't be. That can't be. That's like saying, no matter what price you paid for a car, you'd get the same value proposition from it. It cannot be. Price has to affect the value proposition. It must. And if price affects the value proposition, it certainly could never make sense to stay at the same stock allocation at all prices. It just doesn't work logically. So, you know, you can sort of take this in layers. You can say, boy, it's a horrible thing to tell people the wrong numbers to plan their retirements. Why don't they fix those old school safe withdrawal rate studies? That was the question. Now, that was the card I played May 13th, 2002. And you might say, well, it seems odd. Seems odd that numerous discussion boards elected to ban honest posting on safe withdrawal rates while permitting and encouraging posting of demonstrably false numbers. Isn't that unusual? Well, it is. It's a puzzle, one of those puzzles I talked about. But you have to ask yourself, why? Why? Why would it be done that way? It happened. It's a reality. It wasn't one quirky site that did this. There's half a dozen that did it. So there's got to be an explanation. And I can tell. I'll tell you the explanation. The explanation is, if we as a society were to acknowledge that the old school studies get the number wrong, we would be acknowledging that the retirement planning advice that millions of middle class Americans have been using for years now is wrong. Now, obviously it's a good thing to tell people that. Obviously. It's so stupid that I should even have to say such a thing. But equally obvious is the fact that 7 years have passed and not one study has been corrected. Why? You've got to, you know, if you want to understand stock investing, you're going to have to devote some mental energy to it and figure it out for yourself, or you're going to have to take my word. But I can tell you the answer. The answer is, people understand it'd be better to give accurate numbers, but they don't dare. Why don't they dare? Because if we publicly acknowledge that the old school studies got all the numbers wrong and caused millions of busted retirements, we might as well just take passive investing and bury it. Any investing model that causes millions of busted retirements is a dead investing model. That's why. And, you know, the next step is you take a bit more of a macro picture and you say, if passive investing is buried, well, then the efficient market theory is buried, because passive investing is just the practical implementation of the intellectual construct, the efficient market theory. And if the efficient market theory is buried, that means this whole rational man school of economics is buried. There's a podcast on the Rational Man School, if you want to go back and look for it. The whole thing is wrong. So we're facing a choice. You know, it's like I said to Brian, it's a gut check for our society. We have a choice in front of us. We're going to go one of two ways. You see, what you're getting today is you're getting people, some people deny the problem. They just say, oh, it's the economy. caused all these problems, you know? It's like that Bruce Springsteen song, The River, where he says, but now there ain't no work on account of the economy. It's a very good line. You know, because that, reading the papers, that's just what you would think it was. The economy, what is this economy thing? The economy is people. There's no economy. It's people. It's just, it's something to point to and to blame things on when you don't want to admit the realities. The economy did it. The economy caused the crash. The economy is us. We caused the crash because we believed in passive investing. That's what caused the crash. The economy is just words. So some people are blaming the economy, the Bruce Springsteen solution to the problem. But others, who are a little more hip, are saying, well, yeah, it is us. It is us. We messed up big time. We told ourselves lies. We put all our retirement money in stocks when they were selling at prices where the long-term return was a negative number. It's kind of dumb. So it wasn't the economy. It was us. But, you know, that's the way it is. That's the way it's always been. There's always been boom and bust cycles with the stock market. Nothing we can do about it. Well, well. Might as well take a pill. Just because this is what, it's true. These people are true. They're telling the truth. There's always been boom and bust cycles. That's true. There's no law that says we can't change that. And I think what's happened is the problems with boom and bust cycles have gotten worse and worse and worse. We almost drove the United States over a cliff in the 1930s. We came within a whisker. The last, you know, one of the earlier times when we thought passive investing was a great idea. Read some of the accounts from the 1920s about how the middle class should invest its money. And compare it to the statements you'll read in the 1990s, and it sounds like the same people talking. Same gibberish. So some people are saying this, you know, I call this the cynical view. They're saying, well, we did it then, we did it now, we did it in the 60s, we did it in the early 1900s, we've done it four times, we'll no doubt do it a fifth time. But I say no. Because in those earlier times, we didn't have as many middle-class people losing their retirement money. We were a different kind of people. We didn't have this global communications network that makes both the boom and the bust worse than they would have been without it. We were always playing with dangerous toys. Now we're playing with nuclear weapons. So we're going to have to make a decision. We can stick with passive, which means we don't admit we made any mistakes. And we can drive the economy off a cliff, or if by some magic it doesn't go off a cliff this time, it surely will the next time. And those of us who are my age are going to live to see the next time. I'm 52. So if it's another 20 years, I'm still going to be here, I hope, if I don't get hit by a truck. If I can stop eating so many cookies. So, if some magic saves us, which I don't think is terribly likely. If we're willing to acknowledge we were wrong about passive investing, we could turn it around in a flash. The problem is a confidence problem. Confidence in the markets. Tell people why they lost their money and what they need to do to make sure it never happens again, and you restore confidence. You heal the wounds. And I can give you a calculator. It's going to be at my website in a couple of weeks. The investment strategy tester that'll tell you how to get the money back that you lost. So we can fix it. Not that hard. It's not easy, but it's not that hard. Or we can drive it over a cliff. If we drive it over a cliff, I think the odds are we all go down, rationals and passives alike. But if by some magic we don't, we happen to survive by the skin of our teeth again, we're just going to go over next time. So, you know, what we've got to do is solve the problem, which means, yes, There's only one downside to solving the problem. We have to say those words, I and was and wrong. Say those words and it's over. That's it. That's the only price. And then all the stuff I talked about in my email to Brian. It means if you don't have passive investing, you greatly limit this boom and bust cycle, which is basically the biggest problem with capitalism. It's what causes people to hate capitalism, because people get their hopes up. They think, I've saved money, now I've got some security, and then it goes poof. Why does it go poof? Just for the reason I said to Brian. It was never there in the first place. We're telling lies to people. When we hand out portfolio statements in January of 2000, the stock market was valued 3 times fair value. So the guy who has saved $500,000 over the course of a lifetime, we're telling him that his portfolio was worth $1.5 million. That's a mean trick to play on somebody. And then 8 years later, we tell him, oh, sorry, it really was $500,000. Little rounding error. Bank makes an error in not in your favor. We should tell the guy the truth. And it changes everything if we do that. It changes, you know, as I said in that email, you don't have to have all these stimulus packages. You know, just doing away with these stimulus packages would go a long ways towards solving the budget deficit problem, right? Well, we don't need these budget stimulus packages if we tell the truth about stock investing. We don't need them. People will know when they have enough assets to retire early. We won't have all these busted retirements. They'll have accurate tools to use. What everybody's saying now, people are acknowledging the old school studies are wrong, but what they're saying now is, well, since they're wrong, we shouldn't use safe withdrawal rate analysis. We should just guess. Just guess whether we have enough. Huh? What's wrong with using new school studies? Studies that get the numbers right instead of wrong. What's wrong with that idea? People will know whether they have enough assets to start businesses if we give them accurate information. Companies that are trying to help people, you know, they're making a product at a good price. They'll have a chance in the marketplace. They don't have a chance. When you tell the guy with $500,000 he's really got $1.5 million, that makes him feel free to spend money on all kinds of goofy ideas. And so the companies that are serving goofy ideas, you know, luxury cars and luxury vacations and luxury houses, they're all getting rich, and the ones making good products at good prices can't make a living because of these lies we tell when we don't adjust our stock portfolios for valuations. A bull market is a liar's market. It's one lie piled on top of another, piled on top of another, piled on top of another, and by the time we got to 1999, there were millions of them. And every one of those lies hurts people trying to plan their financial affairs effectively. The secret to early retirement, this is where I came in, you know, on a retire early board, and I have an article at my website where I go through it. It's probably under the upsizing section, I imagine. You know, or maybe retire different, one of those two. I say, what is the secret? What's the secret? You know, when you listen to successful early retirees, how did they do it? And the common theme is planning. Planning. That's what does it. All kinds of people are capable of early retirement that don't know it. If only they would plan. But how the heck can you plan when the number at the bottom of the last page of your portfolio statement is from Nowheresville? It's a number on goofy pills. It's not even close. That's why the retirement numbers aren't close. That's why all the investing advice we've been hearing for 30 years isn't close. All that's happening today is that the market is it, which is efficient in the long term. The market is saying, yeah, you can take goofy pills for as long as you want, but I'm going to return to the real numbers. And if that causes you any inconvenience, I'm sorry, Mr. and Mrs. America, but I'm a believer. The market is a believer in the reality principle, and the market doesn't care how angry the orcs get. Doesn't care. You can ban somebody from a discussion board. You can burn an entire discussion board to the ground, and I've seen them do it. But the market doesn't care. The market doesn't know you. Market isn't intimidated by your intimidation tactics, Mel. The market is like a mountain or an ocean. It just is. You can accept the reality, or you can bang the table and shout and have your face turn red and have blood squirt out of your ears, and it doesn't do anything. But if we turn that around, you take all the, think of how much human energy goes into defending passive investing. 90% of the investing advice today is rooted in the passive investing model. Thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people getting up every day, studying markets, writing books, participating on discussion boards, coming up with calculators. All of it generating information that's wrong. Think of what we could do with that energy if we turned it in the right direction. And all the people spending money, you know, making bad money allocation decisions because they don't know where they stand, because they believe in passive investing. You turn that all around. That's what's on the other side. What's on the other side is good stuff piled on top of good stuff. Piled on top of good stuff, piled on top of good stuff. The emotional side of investing is 70% of the story. 70%, that's valuations. Valuations and emotions are the same thing. It's emotions that cause overvaluation and undervaluation. So take all the investing literature written through March 2009, and 90% of it addresses 30% of the problem. It's 30% of the investing project. Think of what we could do if we started addressing the other 70%. I can't make predictions. It's impossible. It's like I said in the email to Brian. It's like inventing computers. The person who invented computers, can he say, oh, this is what I thought was going to happen? How could you know? You're setting millions of human souls free to do productive work. Who knows where that's going to end? No one can say. No one can say. It's just too big. That's what we're doing. That's what we're doing. If we open up, the first step is opening up the retire early and indexing discussion board communities to honest posting on safe withdrawal rates. That it sounds like a small thing, but you do that and it just, the dominoes start to fall. And soon the whole world is talking about realistic investing strategies. And that means everybody's money is being put to better use. That means every economy is more productive. Who knows how much more productive? Who knows how much more productive we can be? A lot of people are saying, well, the United States, it's over. Well, if we start thinking that way, it's true. If that's how we, you know, depression, the fourth stage, if we give in to the depression, it is over. Sometimes you lose a loved one, and that really is the end. The other person dies in 6 months. Maybe that's what's going to happen. But if that's what's going to happen, then the fact that I fail in my efforts doesn't really make any difference, does it? So I'm going to try to take it the other way. I'm going to assume it goes the other direction, which is that after the depression comes acceptance, and with acceptance comes new life, new energy, new projects. We open up a flood of wonderful stuff when we say those magic words. The depression is a good thing. What I want to do is get us to the depression so that, and then get us through it, give the pep talks that get us through it, and then just step back and catalog the insights we generate. And the insights lead to money. That's where financial freedom comes from. Here's a... I'm going to wrap it up, but here's a, this is today's blog entry, and it was written by Artie. He's one of our best contributors, and Artie sent me He was commenting on an earlier thread yesterday, and he did one of his comments was so good that I said, Artie, that's tomorrow's blog entry. So I'm going to read it to you. And I'm going to take a nap. Rob, was listening to your podcast on, quote, attitude and how investors can remain emotionally invested in doing the wrong thing. Reminded me of a story I kept, written, I think, by Arthur Jones, who pioneered a far more rational approach to strength training than had existed in the mainstream and sadly still exists as the dominant model, though people are slowly learning. So he's saying that this fellow Arthur Jones came up with some good ideas in strength training, and you know, the experts in that field said, oh, no, can't hear about these ideas. But this is a story to illustrate what we humans do to ourselves when we reject new ideas. Imagine you are on a hiking trip through some rugged desert terrain. You see a figure in the distance. It's an old man, bearded and half naked, on hands and knees, with his fingers clawing at the hard, sandy earth. You ask, what are you doing? I'm digging for gold. How long have you been at it? Weeks? Months, maybe. It's painfully slow work. You notice the old man's bloody fingers, his raw and calloused knuckles. You say, but listen, man, digging with your bare hands is a pretty inefficient way to prospect for gold. The hole's only a couple of feet deep. Let me loan you my shovel. You reach into your backpack, pull out a lightweight, tempered edge spade, and drive it into the ground. Then you show the man how he can break and scoop the hard sand much more efficiently. In less than 5 minutes, you have demonstrated to the old fellow that he can make more progress in a few moments than he could in a month using his bare hands. Then an amazing thing happens. That old man's eyes fill with hate, and his face flushes angrily. He charges at you and grabs the shovel from your hands. He's now preparing to throw the shovel, or perhaps even try to beat you with it. You quickly retreat and get the hell out of the old man's range as the shovel comes crashing down behind you on the hard sand. That's not the end of the story. If you return to that rugged location in the desert a year later, what would you expect to see that old man doing? Would he be using the shovel properly and have holes as big as school buses spread over the immediate and adjacent surroundings? No, absolutely not. Instead, the prospector would be at that same spot with a somewhat bigger hole, still digging with his ever more calloused fingers. And there, in plain sight, only a few yards away, would be the unused and now rusty shovel. That's humans. That's the way we do it in L.A. See, this is how human history plays out. People get ideas in their head. And, you know, it's not a bad idea to go prospecting for gold. But the guy, he didn't know about shovels. And, you know, if somebody had told him about shovels before he started, he would have thanked the guy. He would have said, thank you for that shovel. Makes my job a lot easier. But instead, the man experienced a lot of pain doing it the hard way. And now he's experienced so much pain that the thought of doing it the easy way is unbearable. It's unbearable to think of all the pain that he's put on himself unnecessarily. He literally cannot stand it. So if you offer him a shovel, he's going to try to kill you with it. That's where we stand today. Passive investing doesn't work. It's never worked. It never can work. It's pain in every direction. Rational investing is the answer. Rational investing means counting valuations in all your calculations, because they affect the results, because valuations matter. There's only one thing holding it up today: the pain that all those who have used passive investing or recommended passive investing feel about the idea of acknowledging that they made a mistake. And we're facing a gut check. And it maybe will drive the economy over a cliff. Maybe we're doomed. But the alternative is that we're going to have the best, we're going to have a middle class renaissance. Because if we give the middle class accurate information on how to invest in stocks, people are going to be able to retire 5 years, 10 years sooner than they ever thought possible. All of us. It'd be nice to do it the easy way. It'd be nice if we could just say, oh, well, good idea, let's go to it. That would be great. That's not what's happened for the first 7 years of our discussions because of this pain factor. But now we're getting pain from both directions. You know, it's still painful to say I was wrong. We still don't want to say it. No way, no how. But it's also painful not to say I was wrong. So now it's sort of more of an, you know, it's more of an open call as to which way it's going to go. We've all got to hope that the pain gets great enough to make us say those magic words, but not so great to kill us. You have to laugh, because if you don't laugh, you'll cry. But that's what it's about. There's never been any intellectual arguments as to whether valuations affect long-term returns. If there had ever been any intellectual arguments, there never would have been a single board banning. Why would you ban a discussion if you had an effective argument to offer? You obviously wouldn't do it. So, the humans are capable of bad stuff. And it's a little hard to acknowledge. It's not a little hard. It's a lot hard. We don't like to think poorly of our fellow humans, and we don't like to think poorly of ourselves. We don't like to think poorly of people who have helped us, and a lot of the investing experts have helped us, and we don't like to think poorly of them. But we do know one favors by spreading out the pain. We do no one any favors. We have to acknowledge that humans are flawed. Humans make mistakes. And investing experts are humans. If we can acknowledge our dark side, our black side, the next step, because that's the reality principle, the next step is acknowledging the good side. Because the same creatures that dig with calloused, bloody hands for gold while a shovel's sitting 2 feet away on the ground, those same creatures are also the creatures who, you know, put a man on the moon and, you know, came up with indoor plumbing and you know, anesthesia and Beatles albums. So it's up to us. It's a gut check. These are dark days, but there's a reason for these dark days. God didn't put these dark days on us to punish us. God put these dark days on us out of love. He's trying to lead us to a better path. And if we choose that better path, we get the benefits, and our children, and our community members, and the rest of the world. So we need to reach down deep, and we need to find what it takes to pass the test, to go beyond doom and gloom. Doom and gloom isn't the end. Doom and gloom is just the start of all the wonderful stuff. When we get beyond doom and gloom, that's when the real fireworks, the good kind, begin. If you have any thoughts you want to share with me, please click on that Contact Rob button on the left side of every page at the website, passionsaving.com. Good luck getting through the doom and gloom, my hobbit friend. Take care.